The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power, home of the GA Hour Football Acca.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So we'll start with the good news, Conan and Connor. That is TG Cahir's first game this weekend is 1:45.
Straight
so
after
I'll
dinner.
I'll be lucky to finish my dinner now. Will I complain about that? That's too early. No, so that's great. So 1:45 and a brilliant game as well. Ballygunner versus Patrick's Wells. You're straight away, you're into GEA. You've been distracted by nothing else. And then the deferred game is at, it's live at 2 p.m. and that's coming on after that. That's Cara Finn and Ballintubber. And I'll absolutely keep my phone. Sometimes I listen to RT Radio 1, who are very good at jumping around all the grounds and have reporters. I'll keep away from them and watch Cara Finn and Ballintubber as live. So that's great. Two great games. And I criticised TG Cahir, there was a piece in the Examiner from the they were talking about the Kerry County final and TG Cahir wanted to show that and the Kerry County Board wouldn't allow it. So the Kerry County Board showed two of their quarterfinals on a Saturday night on RTE. And the board estimated that it was a 35% reduction in attendance compared to the equivalent quarterfinals in previous years. And they said they didn't want to risk a similar fall off in crowds resulting in more income for the final because their main source of income, they want about 10,000 at the final. It's their main source of income. And they're like, if they put it on television, I can see this from all sides. I can see TG Cahir obviously being hamstrung by not being allowed by county boards. I can see why county boards don't allow it. I suppose the solution here is for TG Cahir to pay the county board the shortfall of what they would lose out on, you know, because, I wouldn't think TG Cahir have the budget to do that. Mm. And that's why maybe this is the situation that we have been in. But we're OK now. We're in provincial championships now, which start earlier.
Yeah, and TG Cahir would probably get the same audience for another game anyway, somewhere else, like Ballintubber or Corriffin. So rather than pay all that extra
money
for
to get
the
it off
game.
Somebody else. I'm actually wondering why any county board allow it then if there's that much of a drop. I suppose it's promotion of the games in that county. Everything's a brand, I suppose, at the same time. And if there's a great county final, it's the talk of the country. You know, so there are benefits, obviously, of showing the game on TG Cahir as well, right?
It is an interesting one. I don't know what you lads think, but a game being on TV doesn't really stop me going to the match. Like, I would look at that fixture and be like,
it would stop me.
Would it?
Oh,
yeah. Loads of factors.
Yeah. If it was raining now,
If it was raining,
I wouldn't go.
And length of the journey, traffic, loads of different things come into it for me. Yeah,
but it's just, there's something, I don't sound like a walking billboard for club championships, but there is something different about being there, like, you know, and taking it all in and just being amongst us, you know.
I know, of course there is, all things being equal on a fine day.
After you've had the dinner.
If you're after having the dinner and, you know, you're not really inclined to get off the couch, the fire's on, it's pissing rain outside, that match is on television, you're not going over there. Yeah. Come on. Anyways, so listen, considering you're such a club aficionado, Conan, this is going to upset you a little bit. So Malachy, we kind of touched on this on Monday. And we're talking about the club season not having kicked off yet. Mm. And it kind of got me thinking about it. It hasn't. You know, you're not seeing the same interaction on Twitter about the games. There hasn't been brilliant games. Then you're kind of wondering, is it because TG Cahir are showing it them too late? And I'm wondering about that. And then you're wondering, you know, are you missing the good ones? And are the county boards not allowing them to show ones that they potentially would have shown? All those things. But in my head, this club season, which I love, I'm not invested in it as much as I usually am. And then I'm thinking back to last year, and usually it's the provincial club that really gets me going rather than the county finals. So Malachy's talking about this, and I was reading a lot of the replies from the article on Twitter, and people aren't happy about this, but Malachy absolutely has a point. He says, at the same time, it frequently feels like we make bigger claims for the club championship than they deserve. You get told a lot about that this is the real GAA, as if inter-county stuff is a figgery or a luxury, or a little more than a sop to the GAA, as if you're somehow less than pure if you prefer July evening in Páirc Cliath to a winter afternoon here. He said the club championships have their charms, of course to do, but you wouldn't want to overstate them either. Even if you remove November Grey from them, they'll still be local affairs, cared about deeply but singularly by local people. They can't plug into the communal heft that sustains and drives the GAA summer. I completely agree. Now, he's talking about championship restructures, and some of the most popular ones have the intercounty season finishing July, and he's kind of arguing, God, well, then you would be stuck with stuff that's only important locally for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
And I can see that concern, but that's only for county final season, right? And I completely agree. County finals, really, unless it's, I don't know, two kind of famous clubs, is really only important. He's using the example of Borrisleigh versus Killadangan last week in the hurling. It really only has local interest, maybe a little bit in the county and not an awful lot outside of that, outside of real diehards. But my kind of point of this is, and I accept that, any restructure, you probably have a bit of downtime in August and halfway through September while the club championships get going and the county finals kind of are seen out, and then you'll start seeing some live games around county final time. But then when you come out of that, right now, now we have Ballygunner versus Patrickswell. That's, you know, Waterford versus Limerick. Now you're plugging back into the county rivalry. Now you have Corrifin versus Ballintubber, Mayo versus Galway. Now you're plugging back into it. Because I know with Portlaoise, we were terribly supported down through the years with Portlaoise. It's just a big town and would have a small GA community. And then you run out in the first round of the Leinster Club and there's a big roar for you. And you wonder, where is all these supporters come out? They're Laois fans who come out to see Portlaoise are representing Laois. And now it becomes Laois. You know, so while I do accept Malachy's point of view on the club, I think provincial club, the world is your oyster with that and All-Ireland semi-final, All-Ireland final. Do you know what I mean? I think that when people want to make space in the calendar, I think club players deserve their time in August and September if it finishes in July. But I think we can make a huge big deal out of the end of September and all of October and a bit of November. Club seat, you know what I mean? Club seat, and plug back into that intercounty rivalry. Will Galway beat Mayo this year? Can Ballintubber, you know, repay Corrifin, you know, and win one back for Mayo? And now you're plugging back into Mayo fans. Do you get me? I think there is an opportunity there.
I think there is. I actually agreed with sort of Malachy's overall point. I didn't really necessarily agree with a lot of the arguments he was making within it. I would hate to see the county season shortened too much because it is the best thing, like, you know, and. Like any, like, you know, no matter if it's Port Laois against Kilmacud Crokes, you know, Dublin versus Laois or whatever, you're not going to get a million people tuning in like you would on the final day, you know, say, like, so it just doesn't compare to that point of view. So, like, when I hear people talk about restructures and sometimes, like, they say, just get rid of the league and we'll have that as a championship. But I like having two things, no matter what it is, because it just prolongs the county season. So I would hate to lose that. And what I think that it was sort of missing a bit from his argument is that club season is like, it's for players anyway. It's not really a spectator thing. It's like, you know, from junior to senior, 32 counties, everybody's playing our games now again.
Yeah.
And maybe the biggest argument for that is like giving them a bigger window to play. You know, so like, you know, they can have actually a chance to play. But
It's not all about TV figures either. It's about having space in the calendar for them. I do accept the point in August, September, you don't have those big blockbuster games. But I think they can be replaced, not replaced, but we can have October as a huge month of provincial club. You know, it won't be as big as intercounty. Obviously, you couldn't compare it to an All-Ireland final, but I'm sure they would do well.
I think I think so. Like I tend to agree with you, Conan. I got where Malachy was getting at with his overall team, but tended to disagree with some of the arguments. One of the things he said was that club finals matter who they matter to, and not much more beyond that. I don't know about that. Like I think it's more than that. I think I didn't realise how much I was into club finals elsewhere until they started showing them on TG Carra. And I think TG Carra awoke to that as well by the fact that they said they'd take a punt in it, and then they realised what a massive appetite there was for club finals elsewhere. Like I think Malachy made some good points about the OTT marketing of the club, and maybe it's blown up to be something that is. I think that Mount Leinster Rangers speech is burned into my memory now at this stage. But at the same time, then I was thinking, well, we make the point all the time about the lack of marketing for the All-Ireland Championship before it happens. So maybe it's a bit rich of us then to be complaining about the club game being built up to be a little more than what it is.
I don't think it's built up. I think there's a lot of virtue signalling going on.
Yeah, there
to
is
use
that
word about club. People on Twitter going, oh, that's a disgrace. I wouldn't even entertain. Like, you know what I mean? There's a lot of outrage around the club, and I think it can be faux outrage a lot of the time. That, like, I mean, everybody wants the club to have a section of the year. There's no doubt about that. But I don't see people as, in real life, I don't see people as exercised about it as you might see online. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the same people won't go to a, like, all they have to do is maybe go to a club meeting and mention that so the club delegates can bring it to a county meeting and make a big deal of it. And then they just don't do that.
Yeah.
And then the CPA will send out loads of surveys. And the same people that were giving out about it on Twitter won't take the time to actually fill out those surveys and do what they have to do to make a difference. So you're right about that virtue signaling element.
Yeah, I'm a great club man. I want to be seen as a great, you know, believer in the club.
The GAA's lost its soul.
But that's so popular now. Right? You start hammering about this and there's a huge audience there. Like, they're ready to go.
This is how to be woke in the GAA.
This is how to be a woke GAA follower. Actually, I'm starting to hate these people. Right, okay, we'll leave that there. But it is interesting, but I think maybe because this is the way it is with me, but just the inter-county rivalry born out with the club, you get the best of both worlds, I think. So I think we'll have a really enjoyable month kicking off this Sunday with the inter-county club rivalries, you know?
And absolutely.
Hopefully it does kick off, because it does. I think it needs a shot in the arm, the club season. So we have to talk about this Mayo County Board meeting the other night. Connor, this is bizarre stuff altogether. This is embarrassing for Mayo. There's no doubt about that. Mayo County Board are not coming out well out of this. Like, I mean, you've Paul Conan releasing a statement saying that there was a vote of confidence proposed in the Mayo GAA executive at a board's meeting tonight, which was resoundingly passed by all delegates. Now, subsequent to this, Charlestown, Sarsfields, Lewisburgh, Castlebar Mitchells and Ballycastle all released statements on Twitter saying that their delegates didn't actually vote on it. So what happened at the meeting was someone who wasn't a delegate, I think he was part of the executive, proposed a motion of confidence in the executive. It was immediately seconded. No vote was taken. And this was seen, because nobody objected at the meeting, this was seen as in the county board's words, resoundingly passed by all delegates. Now, I was kind of talking to people about this, and what happens at county board meetings is that can be proposed and seconded. This can come as a shock to a lot of delegates. It takes a lot of bottle to immediately stand up and go, well, I propose a counter motion of no confidence. You're kind of hit with this. You don't really have time. A lot of them mightn't have the confidence. This is something that might need to be kind of planned, or, you know, when it's just landed on you, you don't have it. So there was silence. Bang, done. Let's move on from that. Resoundingly proposed, or, you know, and no vote. So they voted, they banned media from county board meetings in the future. A vote was taken on that. There was no vote taken on the vote of confidence.
Yeah, and there was a vote taken on the media.
And isn't that outrageous?
I know, Willie. I was about to say, can we go a week without talking about the Mayo County Board? But when they keep making it difficult for themselves, it's hard not to. And it's not just that Jesus gone way beyond a local story at this age. It's a national story, and it's been a mess from nearly start to finish. I was saying to you before, Ann Conan, and I think the point has been made already, but isn't it ridiculous that on a night where a motion was passed to ban the media from future meetings, we had a situation where there was complete confusion about what had happened actually inside, when there was a number of members of the local media stood outside in the cold, who, if they were actually in that meeting, would have been able to report in a fair and transparent manner on what actually happened, and the county board themselves would avoid the mess they've got into since. Like,
but they don't see that when you're acting like this, you don't want media seeing you acting like this. This is shady of the highest order. And another thing is, like, I mean, it doesn't make any sense how they think that they can, you know, get away with this. Some of the clubs tweeted their statements. Another email was sent around by the county secretary telling clubs to refrain from using social media.
I've seen that,
they don't want any of this to get out. They want to be able to act with impunity in these meetings, do what they want, and they don't want the world to know about what they're doing. This is unreal stuff.
They've completely doubled down. Like, they said that the use of social media by clubs beggars belief. Now, that email, in fairness, detailed personal attacks on social media on officers of the poor
on Conan. But that's that annoys me, right? Because, like, that's just deflecting away from it. This is Twitter. People get slagged off on Twitter. If you're acting shady and you're saying it was resoundingly passed by all delegates, clubs come out and say it wasn't voted on, you're bound to get some grief on Twitter. To start crying about the PRO getting abuse on Twitter, that's completely playing the poor, you know, the playing the poor boy,
yeah,
look at me, and looking for sympathy.
Like, one of my things about it is that, like, the stance of the county board has been very defiant. There's been no conciliation or no admission of their own wrongdoing in this approach at all. They've been pointing fingers left, right and centre. And I don't know, are they aware that, like, what's turned into what had been a few dissenting voices in the county has turned into blanket disapproval at all anybody is talking about in Mayo this week. You don't even have to have an interest in club football or club GAA, county GAA, whatever. Everybody's talking about it. And the county board have made a rod for their own back, and there's been no acknowledgement of that whatsoever. It's not going to solve anything, but geez, it would be nice to say. I know there was, I think Paul Cunningham apologised for, I don't know, do we talk about this, when the playing of Shoe the Donkey, Shoe the Donkey.
I chose not to mention that. That was so cringeworthy.
I know. But that was the only, been the only admission of wrongdoing that I can see in this whole mess. And they've just got even more defiant and just seem to be, as you said, just ignoring their own role in this mess, and just he seemed to be happy to be pointing fingers elsewhere, and it's just, I don't know, it's just embarrassing for all concerned.
Yeah, so Connolly, the chairman, we spoke about him a couple of weeks ago. You weren't here, Connor, and he was actually being humble enough. He was talking about how difficult it is that they're running small businesses. They don't necessarily have the expertise, you know, whereas a small business with a turnover of about 4 million, which Mayo County Board has, might have a staff of 10 professionals. They don't. And I was like, you know, he's being humble about this. He's accepting that it's a really difficult job. And then he acts like, then they're kind of pulling stunts like this, and you're wondering, what is going on there?
I think one of the other disappointing things is there's a statement of his during the rounds from 2014, and he's talking about there was poor communication in Mayo in the past, and we need to start becoming a bit more professional, you know, in the way we're operating things, you know, and that's 5 years ago, and we're here now in this position 5 years later. Like, I don't know, and I get sort of, now I'm not comparing him to the FAI, but remember John Delaney at the Aractus, and somebody, like, he was just reading out a statement and didn't say anything else, and somebody made the point to him, if you wanted to clear your name, like, surely you would speak now and start, like, telling everybody what's actually happened, like, if you did nothing wrong. But, you know, he didn't, obviously. Yeah. And, like, this is the same now with this, what I think. It's like, surely you would, like, take the opportunity to show everybody, like, actually, no, it's just a confusion here. Here's what actually happened. But they're not doing that. They're banning media instead.
Yeah, that's their answer.
In fairness to them, they weren't allowed to talk about the Supporters Association or another claim by Eugene Rooney for legal reasons. So I suppose that has to be pointed out as well.
Yeah, well, conveniently, I suppose you would say. Like, I mean, it's easy to hide behind that as well. Like, I mean, this, it just keep going back to the same point. Bring in a CEO that runs the company, which it is. Let these fellas keep their power that they think they have. They're not running the ship. The ship is run by a professional. If they want to squabble about who's in control of what and have all their meetings and do what they want, it's irrelevant to how this company is run. So you have your CEO, your marketing department, whatever you need, commercial director. There's two. I'd say you'd have two and that would be enough. Let them run the company and let them delegate jobs to these fellas and let them continue with their meetings. Let them vote each other in and out every year and let them play their politics. It's irrelevant to how that company is run, because this is a complete farce of a situation, that all this is in the backdrop of these fellas are meant to be running a 4 million a year turnover company. It's bizarre, lads, isn't it? And like, I mean, I think it was about 4 years ago I suggested that GEA needs to just send in a CEO in every county board, 100 grand a year, be in around 3 million a year, it'll pay for itself, just do it. And the answer from Pádraig Duffy that time was, well, we don't get involved in the way county boards run their business. They have autonomy and all this. It's like, look where autonomy's getting you.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, Mike Connolly made the direct shout out to Croke Park.
He said
Croke Park
needs
to get involved.
Yeah,
here, like.
Yeah. No, exactly. Right. Listen, the GPA have published results from a student report from this year. And there's some fairly eye-catching numbers in it and results in it. So they're under four different categories: welfare, academic, well-being and finance. And leave off the finance, I'm not too interested in that, but the welfare one is interesting. 83% are playing with at least three teams. 81% take part in social activities less than most other people their age. No surprises there. 70% travel home for training three or more times per week. That was very high. You would think managers aren't dragging students home, you know, for training outside the weekends. Even when I was going to college 20 years ago, you weren't dragged home during the week. You know, a weekend is the Friday night or whatever is enough. 48% felt confident to talk to their county manager about a reduced training load. So these are kind of some of the numbers. Under academic, which I thought was interesting. 35% had to repeat a college exam. 11% had to repeat an entire academic year. 65% feel their training load negatively affects their academic performance. That's massive. 65% of them think that it's stepping over on their academic performance. 54% don't receive support from their college if they're under pressure. 48% felt more like an intercounty player than a student trying to earn a degree. Like, I mean, I think that's shocking, though. 65% feel that their training load negatively affects their academic performance. I don't know. Like, I mean, there's no student should have to be worrying about that. And this is linked in to the 70% being traveling home 3 days a week and making them do commutes and everything. Like, the fix here is probably with managers at club level, leave them alone during the week and intercounty. Stop dragging them home. Like, I mean, let them do their studies. Let them train on their own. See a lot of companies now letting people work from home. Give them, like, if they want to be serious players, they're going to do the training.
Like, ironically, if you're a county player, you're almost better looked after because the club aren't dragging you back. But imagine you're just sort of in between, or you're playing under 20s and you're playing with your college, and then your club still wants you back as well. You're having to sort of trying to keep everybody happy. And, like, to be honest, when I looked at that originally, the training load, I always thought, you know, training's good for you when you're trying to study. You can't study every hour of every day. But then you're traveling home 3 hours a week. That's 4 hours, or three times a week. That's 4 hours a day.
Being tired.
Yeah.
You know, you can't stay. I always remember the fellas, I often mention them, like Niall Collins, Ian Fitzgerald, and we wouldn't have had anywhere near the workload. Like, one is a partner in a law firm now, and the other is a dentist with a few different practices and everything. And they're doing very well for themselves. But the studying they did when we were playing football, and I'd say they were the two that stood out to me. Like, I mean, I was wondering, how are they doing it? Mm. You'd play a championship under 21 match and they'd go home after it, and it study is like, Jesus, this is just on a different level. We lost an under 21 All-Ireland final against Kerry on the Saturday. I was in DIT studying marketing, and I was commuting, I was going in every day, and we lost that final, and I was so disappointed about losing that final that I didn't go into my end of year exams on the Monday. I just refused to go into them, and I dropped out of DIT.
But just, like, before the exam,
I was very immature. And football meant that much to me that those exams were nothing to me. We've just lost an under 21 final. Do you know what I mean? So it's not just the time it takes. It's mental effect it has on you, and how much you dream about it. And it's hard when you're a little bit immature to settle down to study because your mind is all over the place. You know, look, there's no fix to that. That's just maturity levels. But when you add in that 65% of them feel their training load is negatively affecting. So your training load is negatively affecting your ability to study. Then you throw in the immaturity and the daydreaming and the disappointment. I don't know. Like, it's tough. People don't understand that.
It's good that it's kind of drilled down to, because there's a blanket kind of perception that, like, intercounty GAA now is a game for students and teachers because of the time that they have. But, like, you have to differentiate the types of students. Like, I did arts when I was in college. Like, I would have had plenty of time.
Yeah.
But no more than your mates that you were talking of, they were doing really kind of labour intensive and study intensive
they
courses.
Wanted to be, that's the thing as well, they knew what they wanted to be. That's something to work towards. Most students aren't sure. You're doing a generic arts degree or a finance degree or business studies, and you have no idea what you're going to be. You're just doing it.
You don't know what mark you need to get out of, so you're just passing. Whereas if you're doing one of those ones, you more or less know what exactly what you need to be.
A lot of it comes back to career guidance in schools, and you know, giving students before they go to college an idea of what they want to be, what they're suited for. We had terrible career guidance. Like, I had no idea. You end up just going, what will I pick? What's everyone else doing? Like, you've no idea. What's important to me? Football.
I mean, at least
I don't really give a shit about, I'll get a job through that, mate.
And you're going from the leaving cert, like, in 2 months later, you're going into something that could dictate your career path and dictate where you go in life. Something I was thinking of earlier on when you were mentioning the training load and stuff is people like Brian Howard there a couple of years ago, when he basically chose to kind of not play for the Sigerson team. And I'd say there's pressure on, internal pressure on some players to think that, like, well, I don't necessarily have to go to county training, but if I don't go, I'm jeopardising my chances of making it. Like, I know that's an individual decision, and maybe that's where an intercounty manager has to step in and say, and it's difficult for them to do too because they want to give them the chance to make the county team. But somebody maybe has to step in and say, no, you can't, because it's obviously negatively impacting on your college performance.
No, you're right though, and it's important to point out, depends what, like, that's why you have nothing but respect for Jack McCaffrey, who's a doctor and studying. The study that's required for athletes. Like, that's a, like, you're right, the arts degree, like, that's fairy tale stuff. You know, you have so much time. You'd actually have too much time in your day, and the training is a good distraction because you don't have to go in on. But it's the students who actually in tough courses, like, no disrespect to the arts faculty.
I'm one of them, so that's why I didn't mind calling it out.
But there's such a disconnect, though. There's no sympathy for students. Like, you know, one year we had a manager who wanted to come back on a Tuesday, and you come back thinking like you're really doing everybody a service coming back here, and it's like nobody gave a shit. Like, you know, you'd be late and they'd be getting on to you, and you're like, I've just come down from Belfast, and then they'd be like, what'd you do all day? Nothing. Like, you know, because they know that you're a student and you're not working as long as they are. So there's not a lot of sympathy for students.
No, there isn't. And there is that pressure. Like, even I would have been a very relaxed student, but at the back of your mind the whole time is, these exams are in the future. I'm doing nothing. And now that's a pressure on your shoulders. Do you know? So there's another one under well-being. Is 54%, over half of the student county players regularly feel overwhelmed by their commitments. And 62% find it difficult to manage all of the commitments associated with being a student athlete. You could argue that any athlete, any serious athlete, has all these issues. And I'd say they do. I'm not saying this is unique to GAA at all.
Yeah, it's just the reality of being an elite performer, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Conor Myler was at that launch and he said, at the start of the year, I had to really prioritise my academics. But overall, you're asking yourself and having that conversation, is this master's worth it? It's not doing me any favours here. I'm wrecked all the time. I'm spending ridiculous hours in the library, getting up really early or staying really late. So he's kind of summed up pretty much what we're talking about. Paul Flynn was talking about this launch as well, and he responded to an article written by Joe Brawley. We mentioned it the other day, but not this part of it. So Brawley said that the GPA were unchecked, unchallenged and detached from reality. So it's important, I suppose, we point out Flynn's response to Brawley. He says, there are a couple of things outlined that were factually untrue. Things around our commercial independence. We don't actually have commercial independence, just to clarify that. We have through our agreement with the GAA, we have through our agreement with the GAA, we aren't actually able to go out and engage with corporates on our own. We can do it through a joint venture that we have with the GAA. So, like, I mean, I suppose that's important to point out, that they're not unchecked, unchallenged. There is, you know, some sort of control from the GAA over them. And he took up Brawley about saying they're unchecked and ungoverned. He says, we have very strong governing structures. You were at our AGM. We outlined it all in our annual report. We're fully compliant with the governance code for sporting organisations. We're audited by Deloitte, a big four firm. We've got GAA representatives on our finance committee. We've a remuneration committee with three independents who decide on salaries, and all salaries are benchmarked against other sporting organisations and similar organisations that exist in our size. So I've heard that one before. I'd still prefer if they just made them public anyway. But it's important to point out, like Brawley just saying, unchecked, unchallenged, detached from reality, probably isn't fair on the GPA either.
Yeah, well, it's good to hear them, like Paul Finn, go into as much detail as I've heard about the governance structures of the GPA, because to be fair, no more than Joe Brawley, there's a few kind of high profile media commentators that would regularly kind of criticise the GPA, and you don't, maybe it's just me, but I don't hear much of a response. So at least it's good to hear that.
Yeah, Paul Flynn's a fighter, you see. Flynn, yeah. And I do think that Flynn is representing the players very well with John Horne. I don't think he'd be in any way fearful of the GAA. I think he's doing a good job since he's gone in there. I think the GPA they did put pressure on the GAA regarding championship structures. The CPA did more publicly, but I think Flynn did as well. They've both seats, and I keep saying it, my huge gripe with the GPA for the last 10 years was the biggest problem in the GAA is championship structures. You're the union, fix it. They never did. If the championship structures are fixed in 2021, the rest of the stuff the GPA does, I'm not, like I said on Monday, I'm not overly critical of them. I think the players deserve representation and deserve to be treated well and all those things that go with it. Quickly, he was also talking about tier two, and we've over talked this, lad, so we won't go mad into this. He says 2/3 of players don't buy into this competition. No shit, I would say to that. Forget about Division 1. This is Division 2, 3 and 4 teams who could be directly affected by this as of next year, and 2/3 of them are against it. Again, do any survey in Laois club football with senior and intermediate level and say who wants to play senior football, and I'd say you get a 95% response that all players want to play senior football. Is this what we're actually talking about here? Some things players shouldn't have an opinion on. What was very interesting here, lads, is he said you couldn't disregard the possibility of a boycott just yet. My God. So, right, let's get this right. Some counties might potentially boycott the Tier 2, which I think is just be a complete and utter joke, a farce. Who do they think they are? But the problems and the thing that these counties need to think of is they might not agree with next year's Tier 2, I could guarantee the following year, when all the different stakeholders come together, a tier two will be part of a long-term GEA structure. So are you against this tier two, or are you against tier two in general? Because if you're against tier two in general, you're just going to have to boycott the next 10 years, because that's what's going to come in. I can guarantee that's what will be part of the fixtures task committee going forward, will be two tiers.
Why?
Because that's the sensible thing to do. And players shouldn't have a say on this. Everybody, of course, wants to play at the top level.
Yeah.
There's a few coming out saying, well, that makes sense, we're playing at our own level. But they would obviously be of the idea that they will eventually get up to division, the first level. So they're being have a little bit more common sense, say we're not really there yet. But in general, any intermediate player will want to play.
Mm.
So if they're given the option of a vote, do you want to play with all 32 in the same competition? Of course, they're going to say, most of them will say yes. That's natural.
But the sensible thing to do, say, would be to get rid of provinces, but that's not going to happen. Like, you know, so I don't think that actually means that
the provincials could be gone out of the one the following year, or else pulled out of it. I don't think the provincials would be part of the All Ireland when it can't be.
I'd be very surprised to see that.
Do you think so?
Just with the stakeholders involved, it's commanded such a kind of prestigious place so far that I'd be. I wouldn't necessarily be against it. I think that it doesn't necessarily make sense, but I would be surprised that like some of the people involved would be willing to get rid of them.
Yeah, I think that the provincials will stay, but I think that if you want a fair start to the All Ireland, they can't be there, right? So anyways, we're getting into a championship restructures thing. Then I just thought the idea of a boycott next year, isn't it? It's just wrong.
He was obviously asked that as opposed to him. He didn't bring it up. He said he wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah. Right. Finally, Frank McGlynn retired this week. Top class player, unbelievable year in 2012. Got an All-Star. I always remember his goal in the Ulster final that year against Down. Down started that game really well. Just seemed to be able to run all day. Yeah. Like an excellent player, unassuming player. You know, like I mean, it's not like the country will. I think a lot of people appreciate Frank McGlynn, but he never really made a big deal of himself. You know,
he was like an 8 out of 10 every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Close in the 7, 8 out of 10. He was just so consistent. He was perfect nearly for that Donegal style of football around like maybe 2011 to 20 went well to the present day as well, but like always had him as the guy that would pop up for one or two crucial points as well in big games too. Like really really good,
very talented player too, it needs to be said. Like I mean, he's a soccer background, played in the Mill Cup with Wayne Rooney as we all know at this stage, but has played wing back, has played centre back, has played corner back, has played as the sweeper when Mark McHugh left, and has also spent a little bit of time as kind of a makeshift half forward. Yeah. But like, I mean, that's seriously talented player. But like, you're right. Anywhere in the Donegal team from number 2 probably up to number 12 maybe has a, you know, are kind of mashed in together. So Frank McGlynn with his versatility, you know, and all round game just could float into any of those positions seamlessly.
Yeah, and I'd say nobody in the country has a bad word to say about him as well, no. Which says a lot to no. Some man.
Exactly. Owen O'Gara retired as well. I think Owen O'Gara is the most decorated sub in the history of the GAA. So he has 9 Leinster titles, he has 7 All-Irelands, he has 5 National Leagues. And he never really started for Dublin, you know? Like, I mean, so you wonder when you ask Owen O'Gara, how many All-Irelands have you won? What would he say?
Yeah, interesting.
You know, like, for me, in 2011, he came on for 13 minutes. So he won one in 2011. He was on after 16 minutes. Paul Mannion must have got injured in 2013. Don't exactly remember that. So now he's won 2. He wasn't even in the squad in 15. So now he's won 2 of 3. He got 8 minutes in 2016, in the first game, and he was an unused sub in the replay. He started the 2017 final, funnily enough. He only lasted 36 minutes.
It was like a rabbit out of a hat from Jim Gavin that time.
Surprise.
It didn't work.
And that was because Kieran Donaghy, remember Mayo moved Aidan O'Shea back on Kieran Donaghy in the semi-final?
Oh, that was it. Yeah.
I think he was trying to get them to do the same thing, but it's obviously not the same threat.
Not really, no. So then in 2018, he was an unused sub, and 2019, he wasn't in the squad. So he played no part in 3 of the 7. So I suppose he has 7 All-Ireland medals. He won 4. Would that be fair? Like, Roy Keane doesn't even count his Champions League medal, and he got them to the final. Now, that's very, very extreme.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, it's very unusual for someone to hang around a squad as long as he did with never really being a starter, you know? I know, like, you get more time these days, but, like, he didn't see much game time. I was very surprised at he got more tributes when he retired than Paul Flynn and Bernard Brogan put together by the Dublin...
Onagara did.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting.
Just on his longevity, I think that he was such a different type of player to everybody else. I'd say that's why he lasted so long. Do you know, like he brought something different to the Dublin attack. He was so physical. Like that 2013 final, I think he got injured at the end of that 2013 final, having come on as a sub already. But he did do damage. And obviously Jim Gavin saw in him the potential to do something against Mayo that little bit different than what Dublin had been playing up to that point. So I'd say that's why he lasted for so long.
There's no doubt, probably promised
that he was, you know, we know what impact you can make, and probably being told that by Jim Gavin all along, which made him stick at it for this long.
Do you remember when he was brought in first under Pat Gilroy? He's one of the worst players I've ever seen. Now, the improvements, in fairness to him, over the next 10 years, like, this fella couldn't even solo the ball. Yeah. Like, he'd solo the ball, it'd go way up over his head. He looked like a junior player. Now, having to say that, as the years went on, he turned into a player that was a very, very effective player. In fairness to him, he must have worked very hard at his game to go from being as raw as he was, lads. Like, Jesus. Now, I don't know, was it nerves, but he just looked terrible.
Yeah.
But towards the end, some of the performance, now a lot of the time he'd come on in games and Dublin would have it won and he'd kick one, two and rattle one into the net.
Yeah.
So that's probably easy as well. When you think back to a tight game he ever did anything in, none of them are jumping to my mind. It's very easy to come on when you're hammering Derry and rattling one, two.
That's not easy.
No, it's just that league final I'm thinking of in my head.
He did really well against Christy McCaig, actually. I remember that in the league final. Yeah.
Or Laois, for example, or any county, you know, look... He was a decent player, but, you know, hanging around a squad that you can't get on 10 years, you know my aversion to subs, so I wouldn't have much time for that.
But it is interesting, because I thought the same, and I thought he was always a bit unbalanced when he was using his feet and stuff. He scored some screamers, but just never seemed that convincing. But he survived three managers, and 7 years of Jim Gavin, who no problem getting rid of people.
Did he surprise? No, two managers. Gilroy brought him in.
I think he was under Caffrey was it not?
No. Gilroy tried to change the direction Caffrey went, so he definitely brought...
Right, here, let's just put this out and then we'll start the whole show.
I don't think this is a debate. I'm telling you that Gilroy brought him in.
Yeah, but even surviving Gilroy and Gavin, 7 years of Gavin is probably the most impressive thing. Let's just focus on that point. 7 years of Gavin.
Yeah, no, you can make a good point just on Gavin alone without dragging us into it. Right, lads, that's always time for... We will be back with Tadhg Morley. He's coming up next.
You can't touch this. Touch this.
A few weeks later, they played Kilkenny below Nolan Park, the same year.
Can't touch this.
And they were being hockey. But the camera went in, there was a fella warming up. Jesus, you should see him. Yeah, the fuck? He was massive. Legs, ass, built. But I bust out laughing watching him. There he was, the epitome of what I said.
I told you, homeboy, you can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know, you can't touch this. Look at my eyes, man.
So on Saturday, Temple Noe play Riverwater in the Munster Intermediate Championship quarter-final, and Tadhg Morley joins us on the line now. Tadhg, how's it going?
Good, Colin, yeah. Things are good now, thanks so much.
It's fair to say these are great days for the club.
Oh, certainly, yeah. Great excitement around Noe, you know, at the moment, the lead-up to the game, and the fact that it's a Munster Championship game and we get to have it at home as well, there's attached to that too. So it's exciting. Very exciting. No, thanks for God, yeah.
So it's an incredible rise. So you won the junior 3 years ago, 2016. You went on and won the All-Ireland Club final. Then you came up to intermediate, lost the intermediate final, then won the intermediate this year. You're in the Munster Club and you're going to be a senior team next year, so you'll be the only rural senior team out of the eight. All the rest are from towns, you know, the big ones like Dr. Crokes, Legion, Rathmore, Austin Stacks, Cairns O'Ratleys, Dingle and Ken Mayer.
How have you done it? It's a huge thing, because the club had actually never seen her before, so it was a huge thing to get over that hurdle of winning the intermediate this year. We were close the last couple of years. We won the junior, as you said, that time in 2015, and we lost the final of the intermediate 16 and 17, and lost to the eventual winners in last year as well. So we've been kind of close to it. So we were delighted to get over the line now this year and get senior. So it's a huge deal for the club, and I suppose it'll probably really hit home maybe next year now when we're playing in the senior club championship, you know, that we're at that level now, and even obviously in Kerry then when you play in the county championship on your own then as well. So that'll really hit home then that we're at that level when we get to that stage next year.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. So we have a mutual friend and I stayed in his house recently. I was down in Kenmare for a wedding and he lives just past Temple Knowe, as you know. He lives up a huge hill, but we won't even talk about how far up a hill he lives. But
that's my
He told me that he lives just after Temple Knowe. It was dark and it was about 9:30. And he says, ring me when you get past Temple Knowe and I'll tell you where to go. And I was gone miles past Temple Knowe and I rang him and says, when am I going to land at Temple Knowe? He says, what did you see? Oh, I said, I just passed the church. That was all was there. It wasn't a village. It was nothing. And he says, that's Temple Knowe.
That's it, guy. I know we're very small. We're based at the church there in Temple Knowe and Spillane's Bar is there as well. It's unfortunately closed at the moment, but hopefully in the next couple of years it'll open again. But that's all there is really. To be honest, it's quite a small area, very small amount of people living around, and so it's amazing really to think the position that we're in. You know, even within the county, as you said, going into senior and you know coming up against big populations now, even in the Munster Intermediate Championship as well. So I suppose you could say we're punching above our weight, but we have we have a good group of players at the moment, so we're just trying to make the most of our time now that we have this opportunity, because you know as it comes in cycles, you know we're going to be struggling again in a number of years again. So it's about trying to make the best of what we have at the moment.
Yeah, I suppose that's the thing. Like, I mean, I was reading as well, there's no national school. Like, I mean, like you said, there's very little in Temple Knowe, and you know, I would say every club in Ireland has some national school feeding it. You don't, so you have to join up with Sneem and Derrynane at underage level.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's no national school in the locality at the moment. So all the kids go to the school here in Kinmare where I'm teaching at the moment. So at underage level, then we're kind of, I suppose our numbers wouldn't be huge. Like we join up with Sneem and Derrynane there to manage for underage teams, and you know there's a huge minus difference there between Temple Knowe and Derrynane even, you know, so it just shows the problems that exist in rural clubs and stuff, trying to field teams. And even with our own senior team, like we're stuck for numbers now. Our numbers are like the players that we have are good quality, but we're tight with numbers as well, like, you know what I mean? So it's not simple to try and get everything worked out. Like even a lot of fellas are, you know, because we're in such a rural part of Kerry and of Ireland as well, like jobs and stuff like that as well. You know, there's not a lot of fellas based at home. There's a lot of fellas based in Cork and Dublin and different places like that, up in Limerick and stuff. So everybody's kind of based away. So it leads to challenges.
Yeah, so how do you even manage that then for training during the week?
So it can be difficult, obviously. We have a training. We train in a place outside Glenfest there called Bardove, and lads from Cork can get there, and if one of the lads from Limerick is available, he can get there. The lads in Dublin train away as best they can above in Dublin with a club up there, and we try and just meet again then at the weekends as best we can, once or twice, maybe a Friday and a Sunday over the weekend or something like that, everybody together. But it's difficult, like and then when you know it's numbers are low then during the week, and if there's one or two fillers away, like it makes an awful difference. Like, and we had good number of lads involved with Kerry set up this year, so you can imagine like numbers were way down, like, you know what I mean? You're struggling for numbers of training there, and makes it difficult, like.
Yeah, no, definitely. So you're the most represented club on the Kerry team this year, obviously the two Spillanes, yourself and Gavin Crowley, all from this tiny little area, which is an incredible achievement. Is this just a once in a generation? I know is Tom Spillane used to coach you when you were younger. What do you put it down to? Or because like Kenmare are going through a bit of a golden generation as well beside you.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing really. Yeah, just to have the four from the club was class really, to be honest. And then you had two other lads from Kenmare, Stephen O'Brien and Shawnee, obviously, as well. It was amazing to have that kind of mentality there. I mean, even we all were past pupils of public school in Briskina there, so it was cool for the school there. They had the six pictures outside the school there for the All-Ireland and stuff like that, and the town and the locality around Temple Knowe, and everything was like the flags and posters and everything. You know, there was just huge buzz around that time. And it's probably the once in a generation kind of thing. It was kind of a bit of a once off, all right, but like there was a lot of years there. There was nobody really from the locality on the Kerry set up after the Spillanes there. It was kind of a a dry period for a while. Paul O'Connor was involved there in the mid-noughties, all right, won a couple of All-Ireland medals, but after that again, then it was kind of slacking off until Stephen O'Brien came along again. So it was great. Now this year, there's so many local fellas, and it created a great buzz. It was great for the kids around the locality too, like, you know, just even see the local fellas playing with Kerry and the big buzz that goes along with that, you know what I mean? And, you know, to be able to see the likes of even like me here on the stool, or even to see Shawnee Shea inside the shop in Kinnair or something, you know, they see Shawnee on TV, or they see him there now getting a young player there or something, and sure they could walk down the street or go into a shop in Kinnair there and meet him, you know what I mean? So it's huge for the kids locally to have the, you know, fellas playing with Kerry, and to, you know, somebody for them to aspire to and want them to play for Kerry as well, you know, so it's cool that way.
Yeah, definitely. So there's six off the starting team from Kenmare and Templemoe. Anyone listening doesn't know where Templemoe is in relation to Kenmare. Like, you're only 4 or 5 miles out the road, right? So, like, I mean, it is a huge thing.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that there was a big gap then from the Spillanes to, you know, your generation, and you were the first one to start a championship match for Kerry since the Spillanes. And that was in 2016. Yeah. I was reading, that was incredible that you didn't play league in 2016. You won that junior All-Ireland, and then you made your debut in the championship. So you went straight from playing junior club football to starting senior inter-county championship.
Yeah. All right, yeah. I was involved with the Kerry seniors the year before, and I had gone well with that, and I had gone in for probably a few trainings with Kerry seniors, so that would have been the 2015 season. They got the All-Ireland final that time, lost to Dublin, but I got in for a couple of training sessions there at the end of that year, leading up to the Tyrone semi-final and stuff, so I got a bit of a taste for it. The end of that 2015 season, then I kind of had a good, decent enough county championship with the local district team, Kinnair District, and kind of got called into the Kerry setup then for the following year, 2016, as you said, and then it was weird when the All-Ireland junior Templemoe, so our training with Kerry was kind of limited. Myself and Gavin Crowley were together there, we're both all in at the same time, and then it was kind of difficult, to be honest, because I was based in Dublin as well, so things weren't going too great for me there in the league. I actually didn't make any league panels or anything. As you said, it's a bit of a step up from junior club football to senior in the county, so kind of that took a while to get used to. But we actually kind of stayed at it, and Eamon kind of knew me from Kerry under 21s. When he was manager of Kerry under 21s, I was there as well. So he kind of knew me, which kind of helped. And we went on a bit of a training camp one of the times there. We actually went to London for 3 or 4 days on a training camp, and I performed well over there, and I kind of got in as a result.
Right.
But it was kind of, I didn't really know myself, to be honest. I didn't really know. I was so fresh to it and so naive. I didn't really know that, you know. Now, you know, if, let's say, coming up to a game, you know if you're going to be in the team or not, or you know how well you're going, etc., when you're a couple of years into it or whatever. But at that time, I didn't really know, geez, am I going well here? Am I even a chance to start or whatever? I was so naive to it. In fact, I was going very well. In fact, I was on the A team, let's say, for an ABB before the first championship game, but sure, I was a bit of a slow thing, like, I didn't really understand. You know what I mean? It was just so naive. And after that training camp, they named, and I was like, you know, like, be ready for next weekend, or there's clear matches next weekend, so be ready or whatever. So it was cool for the club now to have somebody starting with Kerry again, and it was big for my family and stuff as well. It came as a bit of a shock to everybody, all right, but thankfully everything worked out that day, and I'm kind of moving on from there.
It's fantastic. And you were so inexperienced that when you came into the dressing room, it would be daunting enough. You sat in Gucci's seat.
Jesus, it was like, Jesus, who am I after? Whose place am I after taking here? People were like, where are sitting? And ended up sitting in his place with a lot of people. But I just found out about it, obviously. But yeah, you know, the way everybody has their own little spot in the dressing room always.
Yeah, so Tadhg Morley has his own spot in the dressing room now, right?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, you'd find your own corner, right? Not too bad. Yeah.
So Kamir, you're a bit of an all-rounder, because when you came onto the scene, first time I kind of paid attention to you was in that league final against Dublin, where you did a great job on Kieran Kilkenny. You were centre-back. Then you played full. You're playing full-back pretty much with Templemoe, and now you kind of found that position with Kerry as well.
Yeah, I suppose for the last few years, it's probably been
the half back line, I probably felt most comfortable, and probably if somebody was to ask me what my position would be, it would probably be centre back. Now I would I play anywhere, whether it be for club or county, whatever, wherever I'm needed. Really, I'd like to think I'm fairly versatile, right? So I can play across any of the positions, really, in the six back. So I'm happy enough to toggle anywhere. But yeah, I suppose early in my career, it was always in the half back line. I was, I suppose, it might have been last year, or the year before. I think they were kind of, anyone was kind of looking at me for the inside backs, all right, the full back line, but. I don't know, when you have a big man who's trying to mark somebody like Kieran Donnelly inside there, he's got a bit of a height difference there. I don't know, I only lasted a couple of sessions, I think. I was back out from the half back line again. But this year, I think, to be honest with you, I'd say Peter Crowley's injury kind of forced them to think about me in the full back line. They probably had seen me play there for the club, right? And Peter and the management probably said we'll have a look at Tig in the full back line. I kind of worked from there. Then I played decently well there in the intermediate club final, and it kind of went down from there. Then.
So, right, okay, because
stay aware of input, really.
Yeah, no, I know that. Yeah, you will, but like, I mean, I presume the Kerry full back line at the same as the Dublin full back line, because of the philosophy ye have as teams. You're exposed until your drifting players come back. So there's a point if the other team moves the ball fast where it's old school, there's a load of space in front of you and you're under pressure.
You are, yeah. But sure, look, that's sure. You know what I mean? It was actually handy enough for me because I'm so used to it. For Temple, we're a free-flowing kind of, no real defensive system, going play ball kind of team. So
right.
I'm kind of used to that. I could have a bit of space in front, but... I don't know. You know, look, as a back, I suppose if you're playing like that, as you said, and you don't, if there's, you know, you're waiting for Phyllis to get back or whatever, as long as there's pressure on the ball outside, you'll hold your own, or you'll try your best. You know what I mean? But it's when there's no pressure on the ball outside, you can be caught and bother, all right, with the ball in front of you. But I know. I think there was times this year, right, with Kerry, we might have been a little bit open at the back, but. As the year went on, I think it improved. I think, you know, we played defensively. Defensively, we were quite sound the first day against Dublin, especially, you know. So I think our defensive plan, our defensive structure kind of developed as the year went on. And I suppose that's the learnings that you get through the games. And we definitely developed as the season went on.
Yeah, you know, you definitely did. So you're going out in All-Ireland final to Mark Mannion with his pace. What are you thinking about? Because I suppose getting out in front of him is going to be difficult. But one thing I remember that you were good at doing is if he did get out in front, the minute he gathered the ball, you were able to hit him with a tackle. You know what I mean? To knock him off his stride or just to be close to him, I suppose. Mm.
Yeah, obviously, he's a tough man to mark. But pace and strength, as you said, I suppose coming into the final, you know, we have a very good coach here in Dodie Buckley, and even the management team there have good pointers for you, different players. You have to do your own bit of research in as well. So, you know, I knew coming into the final, I was lined up to be Mark Mannion, so I would have done my own research on him then as well. And yeah, I suppose that was one of the things that we had kind of backed out, you know. I suppose it's the same with any forward, really. Once, if they are to get the ball, that's, if you're able to make contact straight away, you're kind of stopping them from what they want to do. Like, they want to get the ball with no contact, turn and go at you. Well, if you're able to get a hit on straight away or make contact straight away, you can kind of knock them off a bit anyway. So, yeah, that was certainly something that was in the plan, if he was to get the ball, just to make contact early, try and stay as close as I could to him. Easier said than done, but. That was definitely there in the head, all right.
Do you have any regrets, I suppose, from the first day, that final 12 minutes? I don't know, have you gone back as a group, or that's probably too difficult, you know, at this stage, or have you regrouped? I know you're with Temple, no. Just kind of from your own point of view, that final 12 minutes when you went a pint up, not pushing on from there, maybe?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, very disappointing when you think back. I suppose we would have definitely... reviewed that after the first game, obviously, because we were in the replay after, so we had 2 weeks there. We definitely had it reviewed, all right. Yeah, we were disappointed, obviously, with certain aspects of it. Look, you have to commend Dublin too, the way they were able to, you know, their coaching and the decisions those their players make on the field. You know, the way they were able to press up on us
with 14 men and put so much pressure on the ball there, despite having being a man down. You know, it was very good by them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I suppose we were disappointed we didn't keep possession well enough there when we had it, because we did have the ball. So I think we probably, I'm not sure now, I think we probably got all our kickouts in that 12-minute period. I'm not even, maybe one or two, but we definitely got most of our, a high percentage of our kickouts in that 12-minute period. So we definitely had the ball, but we lost it along the way in the transition from the back to the forward. So we were definitely disappointed with that, and something that we worked on between the two games. But yeah, looking back on it, you know, it's definitely disappointing that we didn't convert any more chances there in that 12-minute period.
Yeah, well, you're definitely on the right track anyways, Tadhg. There's no doubt about that. Like, I mean, I was reading a stat that when Tomás O'Shea came on against Donegal, he was the 16th championship debutant Kerry had in two seasons, and there was 9 games in those two seasons. So that's just an incredible turnover. But this year you kind of maybe settled a little bit as well, and, you know, a lot to work on after rattling the Dubs the way you did.
Yeah, look, it's great that there's so many new players being developed and so many new players getting their chance. I suppose, like, the last year's management team, because Morris and his management team probably need to get a bit of credit for that too. Like, you know, last year they introduced a lot of debutants as well. If you think of Gavin White and Michal Byrne, there's David Clifford, obviously, Johnny Faith, you know what I mean? So they developed them as well, so they deserve credit for that too. And then, of course, Peter developed more again this year. So it's great to see, and there's, you know, it's definitely elements of a new team forming there. So it's definitely a positive going forward. So hopefully we can develop more, as you said, settle down and you know, try and win that Ireland that we're looking for. Look, yeah, we were close to the Dubs, but it's kind of like a close, not close enough. For, you know, we were, you know, it's tough to look back on it, really, to be honest with you, because we're, you know, so far, or whatever you want to say. But I haven't actually watched back much of the second game yet, really. I haven't been able to bring myself to watch it. I watched the first 10 minutes and I turned it off. it's tough to think back on it, but we'll have to review it at some stage, definitely, and we'll have to look at the learnings I'm sure the management have and pick out things that we can develop going forward into next season. But yeah, it'll be exciting to get back into the, you know, obviously with the club now, but it'll be exciting to get back into the 2020 season now soon enough.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I suppose Temple Now is a good distraction for you at the moment anyways, to maybe get over that the All-Ireland final loss and concentrate on something else. Come here, Tadhg, I won't keep up any more of your time. I know you're trying to get back teaching. I suppose I'll see you at this stag that we're going to in a few weeks' time.
Oh, yeah, maybe, yeah. I was wondering how you got winning, were we?
On the WhatsApp group. Tadhg, thanks very much.
No matter, I'll call him. Okay, thanks for him. All right. Yeah, we do, we have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well, so we have a couple of filly donkeys, so I brought them down, and so we did, we actually sold them to, I think I had 4 donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford, so we did. So there's the piebald donkey still there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
They call it. Yeah, you see them on the beaches and everything. So yeah, you can actually, one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them, because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your bonuses, your grants. A donkey in Eden, and a donkey in Eden Palace.
All right, lads, Paddy Power predictions time, and we're going to start with the 3 county finals, Tipperary county finals on Saturday at 2:30. How disrespectful, just to start off with complaint about this, is it to put, I think we did an example of this last year, lads, with maybe Waterford or somewhere. So the county final in football is Clonmel Commercials against JK Brackens on Saturday. The Boris Ali are playing Glen Rovers on the Sunday. Both of them are in Semple Stadium, and the
the quarter final of the Munster Club is given precedence over a county final. Not only is it given precedence over a county final, they wouldn't disrespect the hurling by putting the football even on the same day.
Why didn't they do a double header?
No, not having that. So Eamon Corcoran, you might know Eamon Corcoran from playing with Tipperary, he'd be around my age. He says, personally, I think this undervalues the competition. He's actually chairman of JK Bracken's. He's only my age. So I thought that, I saw Eamon Corcoran and I was wondering, is that Eamon Corcoran that played with Tip? And it, as it turns out, it is. So he says, personally, I think this undervalues the competition. If you had it on a Sunday, irrespective of where you had it, I think you could bring a bigger crowd. So he's not even, he doesn't even mind if it's not in Semple Stadium. He just wants to be able to have it on Sunday. Think about it, lads. 2:30 on a Saturday. If you have a business in town, any sort of a business, a lot of construction, you know, works on Saturdays, all those kind of things, you can't go to the county final. It's completely wrong. And it shouldn't. It shouldn't happen. Clonmel Commercials are 1-6 favourites to beat JK Bracken's. Interestingly, JK Bracken's, they're only a new club. I think they started up in the 90s, so they're now in a senior football final, their first ever. They won a minor and they won the last two under 21, so they're a real up and coming team, so they're interesting. I'd never heard JK Bracken's before. Here's another interesting fact about JK Bracken's. They were in the Junior B hurling final in Tipperary last weekend. I think they won it. Can't be 100% sure. They have 13 players that crosses over from that Junior B hurling team to the football team, and the majority of them play in the same positions.
Yeah,
that's right. I thought that was a good one. Because I always find it interesting in football where they play, because Clonmel Commercials beat Noel McGrath and John McGrath's club, Lochray, Castlemore, Lochray, or something like that.
Yeah, it is that. Yeah.
And Noel McGrath's midfield and John McGrath's full forward. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I was thinking there wouldn't be anywhere else other than those two positions. But anyway, so that's it. You'd have to fancy Clonmel Commercials, lads, here. Michael Quinlivan's the big story here. He probably a little bit like Ben McCormack, who we'll talk about in a minute, probably hanging around for his club until the county final, and he's heading off to Australia then. So 1-6, 9-2, JK Bracken's.
It's some story of JK Bracken's, and they're like the second coming of Lochmore, who won the senior hurling and football in 2013. And obviously they've won senior B, so they're going to be in the senior A hurling next year. So yeah, like they're going well. I have to fancy Clonmel for this weekend, but like JK Bracken's will probably win one in the future.
They will win one in the future.
I've beaten the champions as well, yeah, but 6-1 and Clonmel's reputation is too much for
1-6,
me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
1-6, yeah.
So Kerry final, East Kerry versus Dr. Crokes. This is a fantastic game. I don't know why, I can see exactly why TG Cahir wanted to put this on it. An interesting one about this is that if the county final, if this final, we know the whole thing about Dr. Crokes, if they lose, they won't actually be in the Munster club. It'll be Austin Stacks, because they won the county final earlier in the year. It's not like Glen Rovers in Cork, who lost to a divisional team and they're in the Munster club hurling quarterfinals. If the Kerry county final is a draw, at the end of normal time, there'll be no extra time or penalties taken. Instead, Dr. Crokes will go on to the Munster semi-final against Nemo or Newcastle West from Limerick, and a replay of the county final will take place after Crokes' involvement in the Munster club is over. So I thought that was an interesting one. East Kerry are 11-10, slight outsiders. Dr. Crokes are evens. There's nothing in this at all, lads. You take David Shaw is out for Crokes. He got a jaw injury in the semi-final and didn't play the replay. He's a big loss. I'll go for East Kerry here, lads. Crokes are going for their second four in a row this decade, which is incredible achievement. Again, it's a toss-up, really.
I'm sure East Kerry would love that eventuality of a draw where they have to go away and train then for a month. Wait for Crokes to come back and play them. I'm going to go with Crokes.
Just to let you know now, this is Crokes' fourth game in 21 days.
Yeah. And then did you write down it could be like, so if they win this, it's going to be 5-28 if they go to the Munsters then?
Next week would be 5-28, which might be a bridge too far against Nemo Rangers, who they'll probably play. But fourth game in 21 days coming against an East Kerry team who are really, really strong. Mm. You know, anyways, I thought that might change your mind there.
If Glantys can do it. It's David Clifford against Tony Brosnan, and Tony Brosnan loves club season, so let's go with Crooks.
Okay,
it's probably recency bias that I've seen East Kerry on TV in the last while. They looked really impressive. Not just David Clifford, who was absolutely incredible, ridiculously incredible, but they looked like a really good outfit. I haven't seen Crooks in a long time, but just the momentum that they have, whatever, I'm going to go for East Kerry as well.
Yeah, but you see, the thing about it is the kind of style of football Crooks play, they're not exactly going to be swarming David Clifford too much, and they don't have
unbelievably tight man-marking defenders.
I was like thinking Brian, it would be Fionn Fitzgerald.
He'd probably have to mark him, yeah. And I don't think he'd be able for Clifford at all. Brian Looney now has gone back wing back, sort of, who is a wing forward all for the last decade. And Gavin,
really good one.
And Gavin White. There's two of your half-back line. You're not getting much protection there. Yeah. So, like, I mean, David Clifford could run amok completely. So the Galway hurling final, Lee Mellows versus St. Thomas's. Lee Mellows are 5-4. St. Thomas's are 4-5. This is three county finals in a row for Lee Mellows, who hadn't won one in 47 years, 2 years ago. So they won their first one in 47 years. They're a town club. Louis Mulqueen took them over, and he's after getting them to three county finals in a row. So, like, I mean, they're slight outsiders. St. Thomas's beat them in the final last year. 5-4, Lee Mellows. St. Thomas's 4-5.
Yeah. I actually saw Lee Mellows in the semi-final against Capitagle.
As did I, last year.
And I saw them last year and this year, but they're much, like, they seem stronger this year. Now, maybe it's just two one-off games that I saw, but I'm chatting to Alan, who's from Capitagle, he was saying, very surprised at all the players knowing every one of their players' names. So it shows the sort of preparation that Louis Mulqueen's bringing to it as well. Like, and just that little bit of detail, I think, might get them over the line.
Did he find that strange? Jesus, I would know. Oh, would I? I'm trying to think. Would you know the opposition's team by the name?
Five or six of them that you'd be keeping an eye out for. I don't know.
Well, I would have known all of the names of the players that you'd be playing.
Depends
when you get
on
the county final.
At county final time, you
would know the names. At first round against a team you don't often play, obviously not. County final times, I wouldn't think that's major. You'd be watching them, no? I don't know. I wouldn't think that's outrageous. But anyways, Mulqueen took them over. They told him they were the 11th best team in Galway when he took them over. They had been in relegation battles. Mulqueen managed St. Joseph's Dura Bearfield to an All-Ireland title. He was in with Lochnan when he was with Galway, and he was in with Davy Fitz with Clare when they won the All-Ireland, and he was in for the Clare job this year, but pulled out, obviously. So the likes of Lee Mellows are very lucky to have a manager of Louis Mulqueen's experience over them. I'll give Lee Mellows the nod. St. Thomas's kind of... I know it's hard to look back. I'm kind of against Crokes. The last time I saw Crokes was the All-Ireland final last year. I got hammered. And the last time I saw St. Thomas's was the All-Ireland. They got hammered as well. So I'm like, I'm done with those two teams now. They're no good. I'll go with Lee Mellows here.
Me too.
I think we'll make it a hat-trick, Lee Mellows.
Okay, Connacht Club semi-finals. We're into provincial semi-finals now, Les. Tyrconnell Gaels versus Padraig Pearces from Roscommon. Tyrconnell Gaels, obviously, from London. This is in London. Tyrconnell Gaels 11-4 outsiders, 4-11 are Padraig Pearces. I think there could be a shock on the cards here. I give Tyrconnell Gaels a big chance. They have the likes of Mark Gotcha, Liam Gavigan, who we know is the London captain. The last time Tyrconnell Gaels 2017 played in the Connacht Club Championship, they had to travel to Dr. Hyde Park to play Clonnagale, and they were only beaten 115-110. Clonnagale got 4 points in the last 10 minutes unanswered to, you know, there was nothing in this game for a long time. Now Padraig Pearces, who've never played in this competition before, have to travel to London. I saw Pat Flanagan saying it's going to be difficult to get everything organised. We have to fly out on Saturday, so we really only have a few days to get ourselves ready. The whole preparation for a club team that's never had to do this before, the excitement of going to London, and I think it could be a distraction. I think Tyrconnell Gaels are waiting in the long grass and I think I'll go Tyrconnell Gaels here, lads.
Dr. Hyde Park, London. It's all the same for Hubert D'Arcy, so I'm going to go with Padraig Pearces.
You'd never back against Hubert D'Arcy and the Dailies.
Pearces as well. I saw a good bit at the county final. I think they were a lot better than the eventual margin suggested in the Roscommon final. Yeah, Hubert D'Arcy, the Dailies, there's a couple other in there as well. Really strong inter-county representation, so I'm going to go with Pearces.
All right, okay. So Cara Finn play Ballintubber, lads. This is in Tuam Stadium, which is a ground Cara Finn only know too well. This is a repeat of last year's final. So Ballintubber were well in this game. I remember watching it 1-5-2 at half time, and then they kind of got hammered in the second half, 1-8-4. Final score was Ballintubber 1-9, Cara Finn 2-10. We all know Cara Finn are a better team than Ballintubber. It's interesting that Cara Finn, the Galway County final, was put for two more weeks. So they didn't play it the following week. They waited 2 weeks, and now Cara Finn have only the 7 day turnaround where they could have just played the replay the following week and given them more of a run into this, because it's not a good draw for Cara Finn coming off a county title. I wouldn't think Cara Finn are at the stage in a 7 in a row where they're going on it all day Monday, and like I'd say there'd be only like, you know, a few of them maybe go on the Monday. They're so used to it now. Maybe I have that wrong, but with a provincial quarter final or semi final coming up the following week, they might have left Monday off.
Yeah, I know they drew last year's final as well, didn't they? Like, but they
drew last year's final, yeah.
So I think that's good for them. Like, there was a stage there where they were just pissing through Galway, even though there's only a week between like this final and the Ballintubber game. I think it's still good that they're getting those competitive matches this early. So I fancy them to be sharp.
Yeah, Ballintubber only had the week as well. They beat the Leitrim champions there at the weekend, so they've only had a
but they have a week after winning a run at the finals.
I just think the odds for Ballintubber are very long. Like, I've seen a lot of Ballintubber, like played against Ballintubber this year, and then seen a lot of them because all the championship games were on Mayo GAA TV. Like, it's not a whole lot different from what they've done before, but they're very, very tough to play against. Like,
yeah, they play a defensive.
They're quite defensive,
football,
but at the same time, like, they put on a high press and then managed to get a lot of bodies behind the ball. Right. Like, I remember, like, they hammered us in the league, and just thinking that playing in the back division, that you're just absolutely suffocated by. You didn't have a second. Their forwards were over in your second in a minute, and then like you were trying to attack, and they seemed to have bodies back behind the ball as well. Like, very fit, and even outside of their, like, they've a lot of, they've game changers in Jason Gibbons and Jim O'Connor, which is as strong a midfield as you'll come across. Killian didn't play last weekend, actually. I'm not sure is he fit for this weekend. Then Michael Plunkett, centre back, really strong spine, and then outside of that, they're very solid. I still think the Carfin will beat them. They had seemed to have their number. They've beaten them a few times in the last few years, but it won't be. I just thought 4-1 to
Ballintubber. Yeah, I completely agree. Ballintubber are worth a punt at 4-1. Yeah. Carafin at 1-5. I do agree. You'd have a slight fancy for Carafin, but not at those odds at all. I would agree with that. I'll go Carafin, but in a close enough game. Leinster Club quarter final. So Newtown Blues play Ballyboden St. Enda's. This is in Drogheda at 1:30. Newtown Blues are 6-1 here. Ballyboden are 1-10. Last time Ballyboden won Dublin was 2015. They travelled to St. Pat's from Louth, and they just got over the line against them, 1-8 to 7 points. So Declan O'Matney was referring to that today. I know that's 5 years ago or 4 years ago now, but at the same time, they need to be on their toes. But I think we'll all agree Ballyboden will win this one.
Yeah.
Yep.
St. Patrick's from Wicklow play Portlaoise. That's in Ockram at 1:30. God, the Battle of Ockram, 11-4. St. Pat's, Portlaoise are 4-11. This is a tricky one for Portlaoise. St. Pat's obviously beat Forbann in the last round away from home, which is a very good result. Last year they lost to Road badly in the Leinster Club, but they had beaten Rathnew the day before. That Wicklow County final went to a replay. Yeah. Do you remember that? Mm. So it's hard to know. I'd be worried for Portlaoise in this one based on their county final performance. You'll be hoping the Leinster Championship will lift Portlaoise mentally, because it usually does. It's like a start of something new, and Portlaoise aren't the big fish anymore and aren't the hunt. They're not the hunted. They become the hunt. Mm-hmm. You know, the hunter. Yeah. And that mentality thing is important. So I think Portlaoise will just about get over the line in this, but there won't be much in this at all.
Ultimate tough place to go, Ockham.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to go with Portlaoise. Yeah. I'm not going to back against you.
Yeah, same as, yeah. It'll be tight as well, I think. It'll be tight, but I'll go for Portlaoise.
Gary Castle play Ratoat in Cusick Park at 1:30. This is evens. Ratoat are 11-10. Gary Castle are evens. So John Keane was talking during the week. We're not getting carried away. We intend to take this campaign one game at a time. Very exciting stuff from John. Ratoat are a very good team with plenty of pacey footballers who like to play a fast attacking style of football. So I was interested to see that John Keane is manager of Gary Castle with Gary Dolan. So Desi, after the county final and the change at halftime, was giving his brother all the credit for taking him off. So in my head, she's Gary Dolan's their manager. And then I was looking at this, what's John Keane doing talking about Gary Castle? John Keane obviously is a former All-Star cornerback. I've marked him in a Leinster final. Brilliant player, former teammate of mine in Maynooth. He was over the Westmeath under-21s last year. So now I'm starting to think, maybe it's not the two Dolans taking all the credit. Maybe John Keane had a little bit of influence over whipping Desi off at halftime. And it wasn't a conversation with his brother at all.
Yeah, this boy's not up to it. Maybe that's why Desi's not involved anymore.
Yeah.
Nah, he's retired. But Ratoat's actually really interesting as well. Like, their population's grown like 300% in the last 10 years or something like that. So obviously benefit of being a commuter town. Don't know much about the specifics of their team, but I'm going to go with them.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah, didn't they give Summerhill a decent, they had a good tally against Summerhill.
Yeah,
I think,
well,
the
two Wallaces
anyway,
who are Flyers, and they've Brian McMahon and they've Connor Gill, fullback, who's an All-Star nominee this year. So they have plenty of talent throughout their team, and they're again up and coming.
Yeah, I'm going to go with them.
I'll go Ratoat as well, although I backed against Gary Castle last week and Didn't work out too well for me. Airog, the last one, lads, in Leinster, they play Sarsfields. Airog are 15-8 outsiders. Sarsfields are 4-7. Can't see anything outside of a Sarsfields win, even though Ben McCormack has gone to Australia. So thought that was an interesting one. He hung around for the county final and then went. So I still think Sarsfields would be too good for Airog, who kind of struggled to get over the Wexford champions last week. So I'll go Sarsfields here.
Yeah, me too.
Sarsfields.
Munster Club semi-finals, lads, won't spend too much time here. These are pretty one-sided games. Milltown Malbay 2-5 to beat Rathcormac from Waterford, who are 5-2, and Nemo Rangers from Cork 1-40 to beat Newcastle West from Limerick at 11-1. Are we both going Milltown and Nemo here?
There's a dairyman playing for the Waterford champions, Ralph Gormick, Cal Croich playing cornerback with
yeah.
him.
So, what's he doing down there?
I don't know.
Follow his heart. Follow his heart.
Hope he's not commuting.
it's a joke. And he goes back midweek for training.
Fawn Veal man from Derry, but now he's living down in Waterford, obviously. Not commuting. So I would like to make the case for them, but Jason Curry, Jason Gleeson are doing the damage for them up top, but I can't see past Milltown Malbay.
Very nice bit of work on Rathcormac there. Colin, you must have had a minute or two this morning. Munster Club Senior Hurling semi-finals, just to finish up on. So Borrisaleigh are 10-11 to beat Glen Rovers, who are 10-11. Borrisaleigh are 11-10, sorry. This is in Semple Stadium. A weird one with Glen Rovers, as they lost the county final. So it's hard to know where their heads are at. You kind of feel like a fraud, wouldn't you, landing into a Munster club after not being able to win your county? Now, Middleton nearly beat Ballygunner last year after losing the Cork final. But Middleton wouldn't be the same prestigious club like Glen Rovers, who've won 25-odd county titles. You know, I think their ego, I think when you're as big a club like Glen Rovers, you haven't won your county final, I think they'll go in thinking, oh God, you know, this is a bit embarrassing. I would say that's probably going through their heads.
Yeah, like some people might argue that, like, you know, this is the only chance they have now of winning something, but like surely they've been flattened a bit by not winning Cork. Yeah. And yeah, like you have to imagine the training, the intensity has just stepped off a little bit. People might not even, I don't know, but they might not be there, like just not as consistent.
Now, having said that, to beat Boris Leader in a Munster final, now they're back. They're do you know what I mean? This is, they're in the no man's land kind of here, you know?
And Boris Lee winning the county title was a huge deal for them. Hadn't done it in over 30 years. It was 7 days ago. I'm sure they, listening to Paddy Stapleton on Monday, they obviously celebrated heartily on Sunday night, whether they went into the Monday again.
Oh, so they were. He was outside a pub on Monday.
Like, that could have its impact as well. So I think Glen Rovers slight favourites. So
I'd say Borrisaleigh were drinking Tuesday and maybe went back training Wednesday. Jeez, you have to celebrate. It was interesting, just to bring this up. It was after Niamh Connell beat Castle Rahan. Who was interviewed? I think it might have been their manager. And he said they enjoyed the Wednesday night and they enjoyed all day Thursday. And still went and beat Castle Rahan because they said it was important to if you can't win a county final and enjoy it. And I was just going, geez, that's fantastic. I thought maybe when they beat them, they might not have. But that's for me, and that's what I was saying, they should have done that that way. Like, what's the point in winning it if you don't celebrate it? And it's just bad luck in the scheduling of it that you could get caught the next day, and they didn't get caught. Yeah. So just to pull some Niamh Connell compliments into that. Here, what do we make of the Borrisaleigh mascot? So they have a rooster.
I only heard about it.
Do we call it a rooster? So it was in all the pictures after the game. And I was just thinking, could this take off? This is a big thing in college football in America, obviously. Every team has their own mascot. Like, I mean, bringing out or a mascot onto the field. I thought it was funny in the pictures. I thought it added an extra little bit of theatre, like I was saying to Paddy. I'm not against mascots. Any team want to have a mascot? You could have Jim Gavin leading out an animal before the...
I'd love to see that.
I was just going to ask, so you prefer mascots rather than all those kids who were doing the parade before the leash final?
Oh, Lord. No, I didn't like that. Was I telling you recently that one of the Portlaoise players was explaining to me about that you could be just in the parade. And this has become a thing in the last 3 or 4 years with Portlaoise, that all these children get brought around in the parade. You could be just standing there, focused, not wanting any children. A child could be just put into your arms. You're handed a child. And you have to carry the child around in the parade and you've had no choice.
Like a football.
Yeah, they're just handing them over the fence.
So I don't think even if I was still involved with Portage, I'd be powerless to stop this. These are just children being thrown at players.
A terrified child is being carried around on the pitch.
I don't like you comparing mascots, which I'm for, with the parade, which I'm against. I'm confused. I don't know what to think here, Conan. You've completely rattled me.
The mascot's a bit of fun, and I'm sure the kids all enjoy it as well. Maybe that will keep the kids off the pitch if they're just enjoying
playing with the mascot. Yeah, running after a little kitten or something like that. Right, Ballygunner finally, lads, play Patrick's Well. Ballygunner 4-6. Obviously, they're flying it. They've won, I think they're up to 6 or 7 in a row now. 6 in a row in Waterford, and their defending champions, Patrick's Well, probably aren't the same force as Napiershig, but beating Napiershig in the final, if that makes sense to you. Ballygunner 4-6, like I said. Patrick's Well 6-4. Interestingly, in this one is the how do you pronounce this word, lads? Natal O'Grady. Would you say Natal?
Natal, maybe, yeah.
Natal. Natal O'Grady is the coach of Patrick's Well, but he's also the manager to Tipperary's Sean Tracy's, who beat Killadangan last week in the Tipperary Intermediate Final, and they're playing Ballysaggart, who is the Bennett's club in Waterford. They're playing them in the Munster club semi-final. So he's a coach. We obviously know he's not the manager of Patrick's Well, but he's the coach of Patrick's Well. He's a Patrick's Well man, but he's also the manager of Sean Tracy's. He's going with his own club. He says, it's going to be going with Patrick's Well, your home club. Your home club is your home club. It's not really an issue because we've all the preparation work done in advance with Sean Tracy's. And then I was thinking, do you not have all the work done in advance with Patrick's Well? I would say if you commit to be a manager, that supersedes being a coach. No, now I know your own club is a different thing, but I'm sure he's getting his expenses for going to Sean Tracy's in Limerick, etc, etc. It's not an easy one, definitely not. But if you're a coach of a team on match day, what's your role necessarily? You know, you're not the manager. You're part of a backroom team, whereas you're the manager of the other team, and I think it's more important.
You've all your preparation work done in advance. What if the opposition team throw a spanner in the works and you have to change your plans then 10 minutes into the game? Is it not the job of the manager
to
make those decisions?
And Patrick's Well have Kieran Carey, who was in the running for the Galway job. They have him to make all those decisions. I don't think Natal O'Grady is as important to Patrick's Well as he is to Sean Tracy's, and I think he should fulfil his commitment to Sean Tracy's.
A lot of coaches obviously have such an influence as well on the line and in the changing room and stuff. Maybe he is involved actively during games, but
maybe he is. He used to be the Patrick's Well manager in 13-14. So maybe he's clearly a very he's clearly a good manager. I'm not going to say very good because I don't know enough about him.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just thought that if you've committed to a team outside your own county, definitely a tough call for him. But I think he's too important. He's way more important to Sean Tracy's than he is to Patrick's Well. And maybe should have gone with them.
That's it. He's not the manager. Like, I can see the dilemma because that's obviously Patrick Wells' club. You know, and you want to be there.
I'm not saying there's not a dilemma here.
Like Stevie putting words into your mouth. But he's not the manager. He is the manager for another team. Yeah, I don't think there is a choice, really.
Okay, who are we going for here? I might chance. Jeez, you know how I went against Ballygunner last week. I'm saying a draw. I have to sit in the fence here because I kind of half fancy maybe Patrick's Well to cause a shock against Ballygunner. But I also went against Ballygunner last week and I got my comeuppance when they hammered Six Mile Bridge. So maybe a draw. We haven't had a draw.
Let me go with Patrick's Well because Natal O'Grady obviously has a big role to play and he's going to be there. Yeah. So yeah, Patrick's Well.
No, Ballygunner for me.
Okay, right. Listen, that's all we have time for. A very long show today. We'll be back on Monday and we'll review the weekend's club stuff. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power, home of the GA Hour Hurling ACCA.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. So I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, because I won't see you later. Talking out.